Dang it. What was I saying? The human dongle.
Oh, get your finger out of my eye.
Way better now that you've stopped touching it.
Yes, I was...
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
Welcome back to Oklahed. We are the official Oklahed podcast.
We're the only Oklahed podcast, Aaron.
No. There are people that are from Oklahed doing podcasts, but we're the only ones like going over the Twitter chat
right. And
giving our opinions.
That's what I meant. I meant we're the only Oklahed chat, Twitter chat podcasters.
Right. Well, I'm Aaron Barnes, and you can find me on the Twitters at ebarnes73.
Yep. And I'm Scott Hazelwood, and you can find me at Teach From Here.
And you can also find our podcast at Oklahed.
That's right.
This was an awesome chat. It was something, I know what resilience is. Mm-hmm. I don't know. They put it into a different way that made me think. And I really loved the interview with these ladies. I wrote down some notes to research. They sent me down a rabbit hole. And so I needed one more thing to have on my plate. Thank you, ladies.
I mean, your plate's pretty full. So you're going to have to eat something or scooch the food around to make room.
I know. And I don't like my food to touch. And so
you're in trouble. You may have touchy food.
I don't like
touchy. Or you're going to have to eat your bean sprouts.
Gross. Okay. Well, this chat was hosted by Stephanie Hinton and Kristen Ashley. Stephanie is on the Twitters at @TheStephHinton, and Kristen is at Kristen Ashley. So you can find them if you want to know more about resilient classrooms.
And we are working this podcast today in conjunction with the Steph Hinton's podcast, which is Passing Notes.
I know. And she wants to use our interview for her podcast, which is amazing. Except for you won't be in it. That does make me sad.
Well, then I'll just add myself to the beginning of the edits. Ha!
Let us dive in. What is your professional experience with the study of ACEs? And that means adverse childhood experience. ACEs, in my book, was the pathway that students took if they wanted to go to college. Right? It's
a different acronym from the State Department of Education.
Yes. I was like, ooh, adverse childhood experiences. What does this mean? And it is a conglomerate of things from like divorce to abuse, from watching a parent, struggle with alcoholism to, somebody in their family died, even a grandpa. I mean, it is everything that can affect or adversely affect the childhood experience.
Right. Anything. It's
a lot of things.
Yeah.
Which means if you really think about it, half of your classroom. I mean, our job just got a little harder, Oklahoma legislator, because if you think about it in this way, which I hadn't really before, I mean, I've got my students, and I know that student X had issue, and so I'm going to try to make sure...
But somebody notified you student X had issues.
Right. And these are things that somebody didn't notify me about, student S and J and K and L.
Right.
So anyway, it is all about relationships. And so if we build those relationships, then we should know some of these things. And anyway.
But students may or may not tell you those things, too, because a lot of these things are intensely private.
Right. No. And parents may not tell you these things as well. So it just goes to show we have to really love these kids.
Mm-hmm.
You have no clue what happened before they walked in the door.
Right.
Just saying. I went with a Todd Gregg tweet on this one. He is at Mr. Gregg on the Twitters and just a great guy to follow and get information from. But he said, never heard this term before, this question. But I have students every single day that are working through traumatic experiences on a daily basis. And that's, I'm with you, Todd. I mean, I picked that because I was like, oh, yeah, me neither. I hadn't heard of this.
I hadn't heard of an adverse childhood experience until I was in graduate school the second time. And it came up in one of my statistics classes, and we were talking about the statistics of it.
Okay. And did you see the stuff that Steph was tweeting out after the question would come out?
No, I didn't, because the lesson itself, we just had one lesson one night, and we were looking at a specific type of statistical hoochie-coochie-woochie thing. And so we just, the data that we used was from somebody's study on ACEs. So we didn't even really talk about implications or anything else. We were just trying to understand how to manipulate the data. To get the specific statistical analysis we needed to do. So, yeah, I mean, it's important, because just like we don't tell everybody what happened to us before we walk in the door, the students don't do that either. I mean, we have adverse experiences as adults that we don't necessarily share with our kids, but we may be super grumpy with them that day because we're dealing with our own, something.
Exactly.
So I went with Steve Gilliland. He's at Steve_Gilliland. He said, probably a lot more often than I ever realized, it's important to know as many students' story as possible.
Right.
And I think it just helps if we can somehow allow our parents to feel comfortable sharing things.
Whew.
All right. Question two. What do you see from children who have high ACE scores? How can you tell a student is in fight, flight, or freeze and is unable to process new concepts / learn? Hello, okay. Hard question.
Yeah, well, and I hear fight and flight all the time. Fight, flight, and freeze was actually new to me. You probably had heard it already.
I've heard of the freeze part because in my first few years of college I was studying history, and part of that was like a real in-depth look at like Civil War and World War One and World War Two and things like that, and they talked about you get these three elements from men who are introduced into combat: some fight, some completely turn around and run the other way, and some just they just freeze up, they don't know what to do. Like I thought this was interesting at the Battle of Gettysburg, they had come through and discovered that one of the soldiers, I can't remember from which side, basically froze, and he just, they had those muzzle loader guns, where you got to drop the powder in, drop the bullet in, pack the thing, shoot the gun. And he had loaded his gun 15 times. Like, he hadn't shot it. He had just frozen into the load part. So he was packing the load, packing a thing, and he couldn't get past that. So he was frozen. So that was the only reason I recalled that memory of undergrad school when I saw this tweet. So
yeah.
But yeah, fight, flight, or freeze. I mean, that's what happens when you feel a threat. Right?
I just had never heard of the freeze before. Yeah. I picked two tweets on this question.
Yes, you did.
I picked Deborah Thornton first. She's at DJ Thornton. She said, I also have a few strict rules that I do not allow students to break, which helps them understand the impulses they must control and where lines are that cannot be crossed. And I think that's super important. I mean, especially when you want to develop a student fully. Right. And that includes sarcasm. It includes joke telling. It includes, all kinds of things. But there's a line that should never be crossed when you are using sarcasm or joking or, you know what I'm saying? And I love that she's got unbreakable rules. I think she should post them. Deborah, can you hear me? I think she should post them for us to see, because we might all be able to benefit from that. And I appreciate her saying that.
I know she listens because she tweeted that she loves when she gets mentioned in Okla said.
I know. So Deborah, I also went with June Kim here.
Mm-hmm.
He is MPS technology, and it just brought a whole nother level of things in. He said, I saw similar effects to those as service members impacted by PTSD. The responses varied. And I mean, and so that made me think, gosh, these traumatic experiences that may happen to these kids, they may have a form of PTSD going on as well.
Yeah, from an experience.
Yes.
Yeah. And to give some authenticity to June's response here, he's in the National Guard. So he's had some experiences that would allow him to make to be able to say this.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So I went with Kathy Dunn. She's at Kathy S. Dunn. She said, we have to remember that we also have adults in our schools who live with effects of adverse childhood experiences. We must be ready to meet their needs, which will be understood in a different way once we begin this conversation and use the ACEs.
Well, and so that everybody has past experience they bring to the table. What if you've got an adult in that building who's never actually dealt with their, you know, traumatic experience and doesn't realize that it's affecting. I mean, I don't know. It opened a can of worms, in my opinion, that made me really want to say,
I'm going to editorialize for about 30 seconds. And I think that we have such a terrible view on trying to support and help people dealing with some sort of emotional or mental trauma. I was listening to a podcast yesterday and the lady that they were talking to had a son who just, he really had some behavior issues because his mom was a drug user when he was in utero. So he came out addicted to whatever it was. And you know, that impacts the brain. Yeah. And so she goes, you know, if your kid has leukemia, people show up with a leukemia casserole. If you have a family member with cancer, a family member, then they show up with the cancer casserole, and they're super helpful and supportive. The second you say that your kid has a mental some sort of mental illness or mental disability, nobody shows up.
No.
And the ACEs and things like that. These are things unseen. Like, kid comes in with a cast on his foot, you see that, you're like, oh my gosh, let me help you. What can I do for you? How can I help you through this day? You know, what can I do for you? Kid comes in with an ACE issue, we may or may not know, and then we may or may not know how to respond to that particular trauma that they're dealing with.
Well, and it, I mean, again, with the can of worms that it opens, and you just keep going down this rabbit trail if you want. Like, how many times have you been, let's just say, been in Walmart, right? And you're like, that kid is, I cannot believe that mama is not getting onto that kid.
Mm-hmm.
We have no idea what's going on with that kiddo or that mama. And anyway, so I know I am guilty of not handing a casserole to the lady at Walmart. It really opened up my thoughts of things around me. Mm-hmm. And I really need to be more aware because I'm a judgmental person, Scott.
I think we all are. We all make assumptions that, you know, based on our own experiences, which my experiences validate me, but they don't necessarily validate you. So when I look at you with your, you know, with your issues, I'm like, Aaron, you know what I mean? Because I didn't walk in your shoes. And so I just run to these assumptions because based off of my things. These are hard questions. Dang.
They're so hard. And we're only on question three.
Yeah.
Question three. What classroom or school practices do you have in place to develop your students' prefrontal cortex? I think I put something like, what's a prefrontal cortex?
I drive one of those to school. It's got four wheels.
It's got the eco boost.
Yeah, I can get like 57 miles to the gallon.
So the prefrontal cortex is like the part of the brain that it's got decision making. That's where your fight, flight, or freeze is. It's a discerning. I mean, it's a very important part, man.
And with high school kids, it is not fully developed, which is why you get such risk-taking behavior from them.
Yeah, no, and I thought it was like 24 was when it's actually fully developed.
Yeah.
Which, again, opened a whole other can of worms, especially with June Kim's tweet. I'm like, because I said something later on down in the chat about these kids aren't ready to make some of the decisions that they're making.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, are they ready to make decisions about going into the military and seeing some of the crazy things that could cause trauma and PTSD? abroad, you know?
Right.
I mean, like, they ready to make those decisions. And I get that we need military. I don't know. It just, it had me thinking.
Yeah.
Sorry. I mean, this was a really tough chat.
It was a good one. It was a good one. So what tweet did you find for this one? Developing the prefrontal cortex.
Right. I went with Renee Bell, who is at BioBell Rocks. She says, I try to incorporate more reflective and responsive assignments and apply connect ideas. And that's so great, because once you're connecting ideas to everything and to experiences, you are developing that part of the brain. Mm-hmm. I thought that was genius. Again, I want to know, like, what kind, what do you teach? Do you teach biology, which is what my assumption of your Twitter handle is? Or Renee, what do you teach?
Sounds like we need some blogs from some teachers from the chat this week.
Or people can comment on our, I'm just saying, leave us a review and tell us what you teach.
Yes, and you can you can leave comments at the bottom of this page on teachingfromhere.com.
Yes.
And we can all know. So I went with Jennifer Seitzinger. She's at Room 20 Awesome. And she said, discuss the why behind expectations and decisions. Help them plan how a task will be completed. Meet them where they are and grow from there. Which is easy to say, hard to do.
Right?
Because you have to be really intentional when you do that.
Yeah.
There's no doubt Jennifer does it based off of what she shares and things like that. I'm not questioning her. I'm just saying, that is a hard thing to do, to meet all the kids where they are, because when you got 25 of them running around, that's 25 different starting spots.
Yeah.
Question 4, what classroom school practices do you have in place to build connection with and between your students?
Good question. I went with the brilliant Talanya Norfar. She is at TH Norfar. And that's her Twitter handle, her Instagram, it's everything. Anyway, she says, I think it's vital to ask them to tell you about themselves immediately. This is what I do on the first day of school. One of the things I ask is, what do they want me to know that might be bothering them? Got to read and follow up, and you got to do all these things and follow up for it to be complete, right? Mm-hmm. You don't just ask. You continue to ask through the year. You make those connections everywhere you can, and I have no doubts that she does as well. She's just an amazing educator. She connects her projects based on their interests as well. You know,
she's really good. So I went with Vicki Donnelly. She's at Donnelly Vicki. She said, in middle school, it's important for teachers to attend sporting events, musicals, concerts, and let students know it was enjoyed. I believe that's a way to build a safe relationship. I think we just make an assumption that the kids only know we're there when they come into our classroom. Some of them are spying you out in the crowd when you go to their thing, because they'll be like, I saw you. Or if you're at a football game and there's lots of folks, when you can say something like, you lit that dude up on that one play. And you know, then it really can be a game changer for your students. Like, they love to know that you're at their stuff.
So I've gone to things, and just so you know, because you can't make eye contact with, like, everybody in the crowd, but I will randomly sit up and look over to the right and just wave. And it's funny how many people wave back, and they all think I waved at them. And so
so that one time when I waved that. When I waved back, you weren't waving at me, Aaron?
Probably had my eyes glazed over. Looking at you. No, I'm just kidding. I can hit several students think that I was totally into them.
Right.
But I do that so that several students think I was totally into them.
You just let a secret out.
I know, but it's just to teachers, and maybe you can use it. That's all.
Question 5.
Oh, yeah. What strategies are you using that involve the whole family? Does your school provide any wraparound services to families? And so I'm like sitting here thinking, what does my school do? What does my school do? What does my school do? And I don't know that I answered this.
We should define wraparound services for those that may be unfamiliar.
So You said that wraparound services are so important. What is that in your brain?
So in my brain, a wraparound service is providing some basic health care, providing some basic counseling. Not a school counselor who helps me find the correct class for next year, but a school counselor who can help me with these ACE issues that we're talking about. To provide food for every student twice a day. And to provide free of charge whatever after school or before school activity is necessary for students to be in a safe place while parents are at work. Those would be my basic wraparound services. Because if you are hungry, if you're unhealthy, if you're unsafe, you're not learning. There's no way you can learn. You just can't. So that's in my mind.
No, I like that because I was like, I don't know. I don't know. Question five, I went with Jennifer Newkirk on this one, and she is at TeacherJen 2013.
This is her first Twitter chat.
And so I was wondering about that, but this was some great advice. I'm glad she chimed in. She said, I love parent volunteers. It gives them a chance to see what I do, gives me a chance to know them on a more personal basis. And so that's something that, at the teacher level, you can do. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be a part of a wraparound service or getting the whole family involved. And I like it when I do. So, those, Jen.
Side note, she is the media center lady at my daughter's school. And Miss Newkirk is quite brilliant.
Okay.
Just sharing.
Good to know.
So, there you go, Jennifer. First Twitter chat, and you're in the Oklahoma. I went with Janelyn Taylor. She's at Janelyn Taylor. She said, when a parent enrolls a student and relates a concern, we try to connect them with available resources immediately. Counseling, systems of care, etc. builds trust and sense that the school really cares. I think that's an important issue that we should, as schools, as public schools, we should work harder with our parents to let them know they can trust us with some of these issues, that we will help them and the student, because sometimes it's not just the student that needs help, the parent needs help too.
Agreed.
Question six, what would happen to the overall mission of your work if ACEs were radically reduced in the population as a whole? What does a low ACEs culture look like?
So I thought that was a good question, and I really did sit there thinking, and I would start a tweet, and then I would, no, that's not good. And then I started another. I think I started a tweet three times before I finally answered. And then I realized that Steve Gilliland, who I chose for this, we had almost an identical answer.
Oh, and yes, so, Steve.
I know. So way to go, Steve. Great minds think alike.
That's right. That's right. True story. That.
He said the mission of educating the whole child doesn't change. In my opinion, the focus would change, but the mission remains. Mm-hmm. And, I tried to say that. He said it way better than I did. It doesn't change. You still do. You still love, you still encourage, you still teach. There's content. There's, you know, you develop the whole child.
Right.
And so the overall mission doesn't change.
I think there would be opportunities to do things differently. I don't know what those differently ways would look like, but I really liked what Renee Bell said. We're changing your name. Renee Bell. She's at BioBell Rocks. She said, my mission wouldn't change. I'm there for my kids in any way I can manage, and sometimes more than that, but the methods might. And I thought, spot on. I mean, whatever our kids bring in with us that we're aware of, we're going to adjust to that. As teachers, like you have to. They're humans.
Well, and I just, what else can you do? You know what I'm saying? What else is available for you to do if this is, you know, if there aren't things like that to look at?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I do think it is a pondering type question, but overall, we still love, we're still there for them.
Right.
Anyway, question seven, what makes you a resilient person? How can that help your students? I got personal on this one. And so I put something like, I was definitely poor. I was homeless a couple of times. I was a high school dropout. I mean, there were all kinds of AC type things going on around me whenever I was growing up.
Reason number one, why Aaron shouldn't be here teaching. Reason number two, why, and yet look what you did. You were resilient.
Yeah. And so resilience is not letting your circumstances in life set or hold you back. Mm-hmm. And so that was my tweet, and it got a little love. So thank you for the people that loved. But I went with Shelly Ellis, and now Shelly is at the Oklahoma State Department. She's in charge of school support. And so, Shelly, I want to know what that is. What is that job? What is it that you do? But she said, my support system. I think open, honest conversations about healthy relationships and relying on those you can trust to help you overcome difficult situations is important to share with students. And I completely agree, but I'm going to go back to the chat Vanessa held a couple of weeks ago. You do need to share with students, but you need to be aware of how old your students are and how much you share, because they don't need to know everything if everything is cray-cray.
Right.
Anyway.
Like you and like you shared, hey, you don't need to share with your third grader about being a high school dropout.
Right.
But you can share with your high school kid that's struggling with high school. This is what happened because I did this.
Right.
Yeah.
I also chose a Jason Bings tweet here, and he is at Jason Bings. He said, it's much easier to work with students suffering in areas that you are that you personally understand, divorce, absent parent, etc. Maybe areas that he can relate to, but others take a little more empathy and assistance because of the lack of firsthand knowledge. And so, you know, we have to be aware that just because we may not have been born or had to deal with fetal alcohol syndrome doesn't mean that you shouldn't do a little work to know what it is and to know how to treat and to, I mean, not treat, but how to assist. I mean,
I just lost Kristen.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. If you listen to the interview with Stephanie and Kristen, I had just learned an insanely startling statistic. And so in the U.S., one of out of every 1,000 babies born is addicted to a drug when they're born.
Really?
That's sick. In West Virginia, it was 6.
Oh my goodness.
Out of every 1,000.
That's crazy.
I think I got that West Virginia statistic wrong. For some reason, I wouldn't think it's higher, but
okay,
a week ago.
Anyway,
but these are things that those kids, those babies that are being born are going to be in your classroom someday. And I don't think we should pretend as if their brains weren't affected somehow.
But I don't have experience with that. Like, I don't have any lived experience with a person like that, that I'm aware of. So it's going to be a little bit more challenging for me to understand those issues than somebody that maybe has overcome a situation like that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I get it. That's hard. These are hard. So Sherry Gately, she is at Sherry Gately, and she said, I think the adversity I've faced in my life has made me resilient. Plus, I'm stubborn as all get out and refuse to quit. I think my students see that. Unfortunately, or not for them, I will not give up on them and will not stop fighting for them. There is too much at stake.
Yeah.
Like it.
Amen.
Question 8, what classroom school practices are you using or would like to use to build student resilience?
I was so busy worried about how I answered question 7 because I really did start sweating whenever I actually hit to send that out, like, oh my gosh, what did I just send? What did I just share? That I didn't even focus on question 8, and so you just go. I don't have a tweet.
It was blah, 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 question 8, Oklahoma. I went with Renee Bell at BioBell Rocks, and she said, I have very high expectations, and let's face it, AP Bio is hard, but when we fail, we try again. We do redo what we can, and we face it together. Failure
she teaches biology.
Leads to strength. I mean, it says BioBell Rocks.
I know, but I was guessing, and now she just, you don't have to tell us anymore, Renee, we got it.
But I think this is also a hard question, because I mean, I've never had any formal professional development on ACEs.
No.
And I can tell you, I haven't had any formal professional development on creating lessons or classroom practices to help students dealing with different traumatic events.
No, I think at the end of the chat, I posted like, thanks a lot, ladies. Now I'm going to have to do more research, you know?
And then that leads right into question number 9.
Yeah. So what training or PD do you need in your teaching practice to effectively respond to students in trauma-sensitive manners? A lot. Thank you. Yeah. I need more. So does Laura Pena. And she says, I want PD on everything we've talked about tonight. This was a completely new acronym to me. I know I've had students experiencing trauma, but I had no idea that there was this much information out there. And me too, Lauren. I mean, me too.
So I went with Michelle Shelton, who is Miss Shelton Fifth. She said, helping traumatized children learn. Maybe some strategies that pinpoint specific age-appropriate books that would be good to share with the kids. Sometimes a good book that's age-appropriate for any age can really be beneficial.
Yeah.
And so I really liked that. I just think with so much thrown at teachers, this is almost like a hidden thing that teachers have to deal with that nobody talks about. And so how as teachers can we be best equipped to work with our students who are having these issues? Like this is hard stuff, and there's almost not enough time in the day. And I don't think, I mean, we talk amongst ourselves as educators, like we had this was an educator chat. We all understand what we're dealing with when kids walk in. And sometimes we don't know what we're dealing with when kids walk in because of things that they don't share. But I think this is something that we have to communicate to a larger community as a whole, that there's a lot more going on in our classrooms than just teaching children.
Yeah. No, so. Exactly. Well, in question 10, they ask us to repost or retweet a post from the chat, share trauma-informed practices. There was like nothing out there. So I went with Sharbana Jamil. Hope I said that right. Let me know if I didn't. She is at blah 8, which I think is funny.
Yes.
She said, this is an interesting chat. I don't think ACEs is common nationwide. Mm-hmm. So much to think about. And that's the thinky face emoji about.
Right. Like the tapping the finger on the lips, pondering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah, tough chat. Oof. But important. Yeah.
Totally important. Did you have a boom sauce?
I did. So my boom sauce tweet was from Sherry Gately, and she said, I start my year, and now this was in response to question 4, so let's just go back and review question 4 real quick, scrolling. What classroom school practices do you have in place to build connection with and between your students? And so she said, I start my year by refusing to ask former teachers about students. I want them to have a blank slate in my classroom. Next, I learn their stories through a writing activity, share my story, and then I stay consistent. I own up to my mistakes when necessary.
I think I replied to her and I was like, amen.
That's a good way to do it.
I don't want to know what another person's issue, because what if that person just like down to their core was annoyed by the student?
Right.
Everything they're going to tell me now is going to have this flavor on it, and I don't want to know.
Right.
Like, I don't want
to. Yeah, I don't need to. Now, one year I had a student who drove me bonkers, because sometimes freshmen do that. And then he liked my class so much, he enrolled and made sure that he had me the next year.
I
did consult with his previous year teacher, me, to try and work out, did I really want to work with this young individual again? And in my inner dialogue, I decided that I really needed a break for 1 year from this wonderful young man.
Okay.
So I think that's about the only time I've ever really sought out some information. Okay, so next week on Oakland Chat, what do we have?
Well, we have Truths and Misconceptions, and that's going to be by Christopher Vian. He is at CVian87 if you want to go ahead and follow him and be prepared for that chat. And these are GT.
Yeah, gifted and talented.
misconceptions. Yes. And so I am very interested in this. I don't know if I've shared, but for many years, my daughter was identified as gifted and talented. Lucky. And then all of a sudden, all of a sudden she is now like in the bottom quartile of everything.
Bad parenting.
I know. Totally
terrible
bad parenting.
Schools.
So I am insanely interested in this chat because I don't think the gifted and talented went away. I think the what we are using to measure for that may be tainted. I don't know. I just, I'm interested and I can't wait to hear what he has to say in the interview. Yeah.
And so. Some of the things that I've seen with gifted and talented things are like, these are excellent strategies for teaching gifted and talented students. But you know what? When you teach quote unquote lower quartile students with the same strategies you use for quote unquote gifted and talented students, you get the same growth.
Yeah.
It's just a bigger challenge sometimes.
It is.
So I don't know. This will be a fascinating chat. I can't wait to hear what Christopher has to say.
Me either.
It'll be awesome.
All right.
All right.
All right, educators, you know what to do.
Go out and dominate the world.
Thanks, girls.
We failed Erin. She's never going to let us on this. All right. It's the 5 o'clock enthusiasm.
Yeah, no, totally. You may even make it in the blooper reel on this one.
Oh, I'm sure.
All right, bye, guys.
Bye. Thank you.
Yep. Remember, she had a cup of coffee, and when she goes to get the coffee, one of her kids says, "Mom, will you make me a waffle?" And while she's making the waffle, she realized she started a load of laundry that she, no.
We're only saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, okay.